Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you fellow workers until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Sing it! Which side are you on?
So we're back here on the second half of News Dissector Radio, saluting Pete Seeger, who died this past week at age 94. A long life, a long commitment to progressive values and to social issues, unlike almost any other artist. He was respected by people from all sides of the musical tradition, as I saw when there was a tribute for his 90th birthday at Madison Square Garden, which was packed with all, not only with, you know, fans, but artists, and just people wanted to pay their respects to Pete Seeger. And he, you know, his voice wasn't quite what it had been, but he was there as well. And it was an amazing moment because it showed that this man inspired love from his fans. It wasn't like one of these "I want your autograph" type things,
right?
Or,
well, sure.
You know, they weren't, kind of enthralled by his celebrity.
Yeah, and he proved to be on the right side of history, which, you know, must have felt pretty good.
Paul, or maybe we could at this point have the audience hear and be exposed to some of the music that you created, inspired by Pete Seeger and the whole folk music movement in America, because you've taken these songs, you've popularized them, you've also given them a focus for Occupy Wall Street. You know, you've brought them into the present world and also changed some of the lyrics.
Yeah, and also, by the way, you may not be aware of this, but a number of these songs that I've written over the past decade or so were intended to be used for documentaries made by a very famous documentary filmmaker who you may have heard of. His name is Danny Schechter.
Thanks, Paul. Yes, your music is phenomenal. Let's listen to some of this stuff, because play a few songs now, because I think you can see that they're in the Seeger tradition, so to speak, that Pete Seeger maybe never even heard them, but he certainly inspired people like you and me and people all over the world to generate more music. I mean, Pete Seeger was sort of there in this studio when you were working this, although he wasn't there physically.
Actually, he was sitting right where you're sitting right now, Danny, whispering in my ear suggestions about phrasing and this and that. Not really. Anyway, what I'm going to play is a few things of mine that I recorded here. And the first two are the song that we just heard Pete Seeger sing, "Which Side Are You On?", a classic anthem of the union movement from the 1930s. And what I've done is updated the lyrics to reflect what's going on now. And the arrangements are totally different. The first is me playing acoustic guitar and playing a few lead licks along with it that I overdubbed. And that's kind of a reflection on the folk scene at that time. And the second version represents another aspect of Pete Seeger's influence, which is his explorations of music from around the world, which itself was influenced by his dad, who was a musicologist. So what I did there is sang the same lyrics, but I brought in a groove from northern Brazil. And you can really hear a difference in the feel of it. The first one seems to sound more, hey, let's get up and get out on the street. The second one has more gravity to it, gives you a feeling of sort of dark urgency. So I'll play short versions of these two.
Come all you good workers and all you dispossessed, the perps are not in prison, nobody has confessed. I say, which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? Well, which side are you on, girl? Which side are you on? My daddy was a banker, but I'm not a banker's son, 'cause I refuse to profit from the pain of anyone. Yeah, which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? Yeah, which side are you on, girl? Which side are you on? My mama was a waitress, and I'm a waitress's girl. I take nobody's orders, I'm here to feed the world. Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? Yeah, which side are you on, girl? Which side are you on? My daddy was a banker, but I'm not a banker's son, 'cause I refuse to profit from the pain of anyone. My mama was a waitress, and I'm a waitress's girl. I take nobody's orders, I'm here to feed the world. Yeah, which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, girl? Which side are you on?
And this next song kicks the political issues, but in a totally different musical framework. It was written after 9/11, and I'm poking around here at both sides of the insane coin that created that whole thing. It's called 70 Virgins.
Sweet revenge for the chosen son. The flag, salute the gun. Yeah. Tell me again what's that you said? What is it you're hiding? And the news you're not providing. The innocent will foot the bill. The guilty aren't speaking. The God of war is the the man, this was not some cosmic plan. Lately,
70 virgins in the sky, 70 virgins in the sky.
Ah, yes, the fabulous Polarity One. But enough about me. Let's please get back to Pete Seeger. You know, we kind of take it for granted. Here's a guy in his 90s, still up there singing, you know, whatever condition his voice was in. And you have to think, he had been doing this since the 30s. And he was involved in political activism since the 30s, since the 1930s, not the age 30s, from the 30s up to 70-something years, sticking it out and banging away at a society that needed tremendous change at his own risk.
And what he did also was he lived the values that he preached. He built his own house, okay? He lived very austerely with his children. He was not somebody who was a big conspicuous consumer. He lived in a kind of rural suburb. It became more suburbanized, but it was also close to where the Clearwater boat had its birth. He sang at the folk festivals in Croton that were held every year, and he was one of the featured attractions there. And, you know, so he was also somebody who encouraged artists, women, minorities of all kinds to express themselves and to be part of it. He learned their songs. He sang their songs.
And this lefty non-believer in a deity up in the sky, I think has held on to throughout his life most of the values that the hard right claimed to have. He always gave to other people. He was a family values guy. This guy was married to the same woman, his first wife, for 70 years. When she died last year, a day before their 70th anniversary. It's just so interesting how much territory this man covered. You know, and that thing, he built his own house and lived there for 60-something years.
And chopped wood. This is the second kind of octogenarian, if that's what you call them, you know, who I've been connected to that died in the last few months. Nelson Mandela, who I've written this book about, died in December 5th, and now Pete Seeger leaves us. And of course, you know, his passing is really part of the end of an era, maybe, or maybe the ball will be passed to a new generation that's already picking it up. You can see it in all the music on YouTube and all the music on iTunes and all the people who are making music in the Seeger tradition. So, you know, maybe one age gives way to the next, obviously, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, whoa. Yeah. And now here we are at 2014, remembering Pete Seeger.
You know, we have certified proof here of his connection with later generations, singing a duet with Bruce Springsteen on Woody Guthrie's Ghost of Tom Joad.
He pulls a prayer book out of a sleeping bag. Preacher lights up a butt and takes a drag. Waiting for when the last shall be first and the first shall be last. In a cardboard box neath the underpass, we got a one-way ticket to the promised land. You got a hole in your belly and a gun in your hand. Sleeping on a pillow of solid rock. Bathing in the city aqueduct.
A highway is alive tonight.
A highway is alive tonight.
But nobody's kidding nobody about where it goes.
Where it's headed.
I'm sitting down here in the campfire light.
Sitting down here in the campfire
light. Searching for the ghost of Tom Joad.
You know, one thing what you're saying about how the activist music moves on from here, post-Seeger, and I'm not real optimistic about it, frankly. There was one fundamental difference about in Seeger's time going all the way up through the 60s. After the 60s, corporate advertisers got to understand something. They were way behind the curve about where this gigantic, you know, generation was going. And it was only in the 70s when they started doing the, you know, groovy, where it's at, the new Colgate toothpaste. You know, and since then, music has become so corporatized and so niched that I don't know how a counterculture can rise now without advertisers swooping in before it gets a chance to find itself, and they start advertising the soundtrack to the counterculture, the costume for the counterculture.
But sometimes that music kind of came from other places that weren't concert halls, weren't universities, weren't churches. I'm talking now about hip-hop and rap, which broke onto the scene. I did the first piece on hip, not produced it, for ABC 2020 back in 1981. And at the time, we said, this music is going to be with us for a long time. And it became almost the dominant form of popular music. And at the beginning, it was certainly, there was certainly music that raised questions. But as the corporations got into it, it became more about the Benjamins, you know, making money, making
that's
a profit.
Right.
The values it put forth were often out of whack with the spirit of hip-hop. And, you know,
well, you know, the funny thing about hip-hop is that it was starting to get political there and then quickly turned into gangster rap, and the political stuff went totally underground. And advertisers couldn't be happier. You know, they didn't have a bunch of unpredictable rebels out there, you know. They now had people they could advertise to. Blingity bling.
You know, Polar, one of the things about Pete was that his songs were picked up by others, covered, as they say,
yeah,
by other artists who did very well with them commercially. You know, I don't think he ever saw, you know, commercial wealth, but not that that was his objective, but other people did, if you will, exploit or popularize his music.
And actually, he did make money. He did have copyrights on those songs. If I Had a Hammer, Turn, 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 Where Have All the Flowers Gone? All three of those songs that I just mentioned were top 10 national hits. And, you know, it's no mystery that some guy, you know, leading sing-alongs and playing a banjo is not going to, you know, be a top 10 hit. Whereas, you know, Peter, Paul, Mary and Kingston Trio, you know, the smooth sound really got over. But the main thing is that what Pete Seeger stood for gained so much popular currency at that time.
I think we might want to listen to some of that.
Yeah, let's listen to a few of those early covers that really set things off.
Where have all the soldiers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the soldiers gone? A long, long time ago. Where have all the soldiers gone? Gone to graveyards, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn?
I had a hammer in the morning. I had a hammer in the evening. Over this land, I had a hammer out of danger. I had a hammer out of warning. I had a hammer out of love between my brothers and my sisters. Oh,
those are three early covers of Pete Seeger songs that reached the top of the pop charts. The first was the Kingston Trio doing Where Have All the Flowers Gone? And then there was Peter, Paul, and Mary, I Had a Hammer, and the Byrds in the mid-60s dragging Pete Seeger into the tawdry world of electric rock and roll. Their version of Turn, Turn, Turn. Actually, Seeger did not write the lyrics to that one. God did. They came from the Bible, Ecclesiastes, I think.
I have this image in my mind. I worked at a rock and roll radio station for many years, and I went to a lot of big rock shows, you know, where they're coming in with truckloads of equipment and gear and electronic equipment and personnel, you know, a whole army of people hired with these giant trucks crisscrossing the country, setting up the stage and on. And then the image of Pete Seeger walking around with his guitar and banjo on his back, this tall, loned figure who didn't have, you know, the big band behind him, didn't have the big corporate marketing support behind him, really, but who was greeted everywhere he went. And he traveled, you know, all over the world. I mean, this is pretty amazing. He sang in folk festivals and in various political events and on marches and at strikes. And his voice was there encouraging other voices to be heard. And that, I think, is the democratic spirit of Pete Seeger that we can't, you know, kind of minimize, because it's he, of course, is a name. He's a celebrity in a way. He's highly ranked in the, you know, in the lists of people that musicians admire, that fans admire, that all of us admire. But it wasn't because he got a lot of radio airplay. It wasn't because...
No, it definitely wasn't.
You know, he was there. That's the thing I was trying to say. He was there when other people weren't. And it required him schlepping off of his mountain in upstate New York, taking a train into the city, carrying all this gear. You know, he was a man that was simple in the way he organized himself, but also a very wired into all of these groups who flooded his phone with, would you come and do this? Would you join our picket line? Would you be part of this folk festival? And you know what? A lot of times, the only word he knew was yes, he would be there.
And also, what's just so interesting is his own life story. You know, the narrative, it perfectly describes everything that he preached in his music. I mean, which should be not unusual, except that, well, damn it, it is unusual when somebody is exactly who they say they are. He was born into a fairly well-off Manhattan family, a family of academics. He himself went to Harvard on a scholarship. I think it was a partial scholarship. And at some point, it just wasn't happening for him, and he had other things that grabbed him. And before you know it, he's out there during the Depression, hitchhiking across the country and riding on freight trains. You know, the man lived everything that he spoke and sang about.
You know, that's why I think we're talking about him now, why we remember him, why we miss him, and will miss him, and miss his contribution, because, you know, there are not that many giants like this who come along. And, you know, as part of our times, he was a man of our times, and yet he was a man with vision of the future. He understood the tremendous threats of nuclear devastation, whether through bombs or nuclear power. He understood the ecological dangers and the climate change challenges that he actually applied himself not only to sing about, but to work on actively with other people. So Pete Seeger was, a person who recognized that there was a value, that there was a necessity to work with others, not just by himself, not just to, you know, he could have retired a long time ago, and he's won a lot of awards, and he's been honored here and honored there. But he was honored most by young kids who I saw, you know, kind of embracing him, and he would spend a little time showing them some chords. you know what I mean? He never lacked time to interact with people. And, you know, in my own experience, very small, you know, minutiae, you know, on this whole historical train, you know, he was so kind to me. He was so willing to hang out and to, you know, talk with me about issues that he cared about. And I think, you know, multiply that by who knows how many. So you can have influence in our culture without being, you know, a superstar in our culture. You can be somebody who is respected and admired for the quality of what you've done, for the sincerity of what you're about, for the dedication and devotion and the passion that you bring to your work. I mean, I'm obviously, it's a little tearful for me, you know, thinking about Pete, you know, dying, and, you know, I can't claim to be a good buddy of his or all the rest of it, but he was there and at a time when we needed him to be there, and we have to remember him in that way, and with this music, with these songs. Please listen to the rest of the songs we're going to play, and if you have some comments, please share them with me at dissector@mediachannel.org. The podcast of this program will be in the archive of PRN, and I'll have it on my blog at newsdissector.net. Check out mediachannel.org and my book website, medibabook.com.
And while you're at it, check out my website, polarity1.com. That's polarity and the number 1.com. And download for free some of the songs of mine that you've heard on this show and Danny's films and that you've heard on this very show.
I hope that Polar and I, you know, helped you learn a little bit more about
Pete Seeger, American Hero. So let's hear another one of Pete's songs now.
I'm just a typical American boy from a typical American town. I believe in God and Senator Dodd and in keeping old Castro down. And when it came my time to serve, I knew better dead than red. But when I got to my old draft board, buddy, this is what I said. Sarge, I'm only 18, I got a ruptured spleen, and I always carry a purse. I got eyes like a bat, and my feet are flat, and my asthma's getting worse. Oh, think of my career, my sweetheart dear, my poor old invalid aunt. Besides, I ain't no fool, I'm a-going to school, and I'm a-working in a defense plant. I got a dislocated disc and a racked up back. I'm allergic to flowers and bugs. And when the bombshells hit, I get epileptic fits, and I'm addicted to 1,000 drugs. I got the weakness woes, I can't touch my toes, I can hardly reach my knees. And if the enemy came close to me, I'd probably start to sneeze. Sarge, I'm only 18, I got a ruptured spleen.
Yeah, that was Pete Seeger's version of Phil Oakes' Vietnam-era song, Draft Dodger Rag. You know, when I was a kid, I used to go to sleep every night listening to this fantastic folk music show on, I think it was WJRZ in New Jersey, Jerry White, I think that was the name of the DJ, and he played everything, Seeger and Dylan, Buffy St. Marie, Judy Collins, Dave Van Ronk, Richie Havens, the Greenbrier Boys, New Lost City Ramblers, founded by Pete Seeger's half-brother Mike Seeger, and Doc Boggs, and Peggy Seeger, and all the Appalachian stuff, and Quesken Jug Band, and Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, all the Chicago blues stuff, and the Delta blues stuff, and stuff from all over the world. It was incredible. And I got such a fantastic musical education from that show. It launched my political consciousness. It launched my guitar playing, blues harp playing, my songwriting, everything. This incredible musical, political, cultural explosion in this country that this guy, Pete Seeger, helped to launch. And the theme song that started and ended the show was this hauntingly beautiful instrumental by Pete Seeger called Goofin' Off Suite. And I think that would be fitting to go out of this show with Goofin' Off Suite. And with that, we'll bid goodbye to this incredible creature that walked this planet.